Introducing Bluehost Cloud, ultra-fast WordPress hosting with 100% uptime. Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Of course you do. And now you can have all three with Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. With 100% uptime and incredibly speedy load times, your WordPress websites will be dependable and lightning fast on a global scale. Plus, your sites can handle even the biggest traffic spikes without going down or lagging. And with Bluehost Cloud, you get 24/7 WordPress priority support, meaning you're connected to WordPress experts anytime you need them. Not to mention, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. So, what are you waiting for? Get Bluehost Cloud today by visiting Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com.
Hello and welcome everyone to Active Quest episode 1, 2, 3. My name is Chris Penwell, and I am joined by Josh Nichols.
Hey, Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing good, doing good. Bit sad that Joseph isn't here today. He's still figuring out like moving stuff, but we have an awesome guest to join us today, and that's Abram Buhner. Thank you for coming back.
Thank you for having me. I loved my first appearance. I'm really glad to get to talk to you guys some more.
Yeah, looking forward to talking about E3 with you. And you're from Backlog Banter, you're from CBR, anything else?
That's it.
Awesome. So before we move on, I have to say, you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, and Google Play. Please review us if you can. It would really help us out. And, you know, we're trying to spread the message about Active Quest. And hopefully you're enjoying the show. You can follow us on Twitter at Active Quest Show. You can email us at activequestpodcast@gmail.com. You can get our shirt, and we are proud to be a part of the HP Video Game Podcast Network. So let's go right into it. Jeff Keighley, he started off the summer game, Summer Game Fest, you know, E3 season, with some big announcements. So let's talk about the biggest one of the show. We're not going to go into like chronological order. I think we're just going to talk about like what we're interested in. Elden Ring. It's received a January 21st, 2022 release. This is a huge announcement from Jeff. I don't know how he got it, but this is great news for anyone who's a From Software fan. Abram, let's start with you. Like, what do you think of this?
So, from my perspective, I was most interested in the fact that Jeff Keighley got this announcement. Because, yeah, like you said, he really brought the heat to that showcase when I didn't expect it. But in the context of Elden Ring, I have to say I'm just not really a Souls fan. So this announcement kind of ships in the night with it for me. But my co-host at BLB, Tucker Hazel, is a huge Souls fan. So judging off his reaction and a lot of my other friends, it was clearly a good showing. And I like the concept of an open world Souls game. If it's able to integrate, you know, some good exploration elements, that might get me in. I enjoyed what I played of Sekiro, but on the whole, just not my design philosophy, but I'm so glad we finally saw it and that it's coming so imminently for the people who've been waiting for literally years now.
Do you prefer when a game developer kind of like releases a trailer like 6 months before it's released? I bet you do as a Nintendo fan.
I want your game to be announced and to come out 2 days later if possible. If we can mitigate delays, if I see a game I like and it's a title card, nothing else, I just can't sleep for like a month and a half, you know. Let's keep it efficient, and that's partially why this Elden Ring reveal was so great.
Josh, do you have any thoughts on this?
I've always been somebody who thought the Souls games were neat, but I haven't like personally like, you know, put a lot of time into them. I still want to try. I think I'm going to pick this up at release just because I'm especially excited because of George R. R. Martin being involved. And I haven't like read Game of Thrones or anything, but I really like when an author is involved with world building. Like we saw that with Kingdoms of Amalur too. And I think that's like kind of exciting because then the developer can focus on like the game itself. And then like the world buildings from someone who specializes in that. I just think that's a cool combo.
And for me, I think Joseph's going to kill me for this comment, but I've always found the Souls games kind of dull, like in terms of story and the lore. It's never really gravitated towards me.
So. Well, that's not their strong suit. So yeah, if that's what you're mostly into, it makes sense to not be as into them, you know? Yeah,
because it's got solid gameplay. It's a bit too tough for my liking, but I still enjoy it. And if you intertwine like a great story with that gameplay, I think they're onto a winner.
Do you think this will have a bigger kind of story because of like George R. R. Martin and stuff? Or do you think it'll be like the other Souls games?
I think so. I think they'll be more involved in a way. But we don't know for sure because we haven't seen any further gameplay of it. We just saw like a brief kind of trailer.
It's real and coming out soon is basically what we got. Yeah.
You know what else is coming out soon? Probably next year, I believe. Tiny Tina's Wonderlands, which is a fantasy sci-fi FPS spin-off of Borderlands that stars Andy Samberg, Wanda Sykes, Will Arnett, and Ashley Birch. That's quite the cast. And I feel like this is going to be like Critical Role the game, you know, where like we're going to go through all sorts of different like D&D style situations. It's a nice change of pace for the Borderlands series. Like I know there was like that DLC for Borderlands 2 that was kind of about Tiny Tina's D&D obsession, but it would be really cool to see it in a fantasy setting.
Yeah.
I think it's really great that we're seeing a resurgent Borderlands right now. You know, it was so beloved in the seventh generation, and then it probably took too long to get, you know, going again with 3. I think that gap might have been a little bit too long, but between that reception and the film and now this, I think we could be in a position where, you know, Borderlands is able to kind of ride the Destiny wave, ride the resurgent multiplayer shooter wave, and carve out a pretty good niche. Again, like Elden Ring, you know, I'm not big on Borderlands. I played a little bit of 2. It just, its humor doesn't quite speak to me, and that's such a big draw of the game. But from a macro perspective, I think this is really important if Gearbox wants to actually solidify its franchises, being more than just, you know, a siloed off shooter here or there. Having this larger universe is really useful.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be a shooter again, but with that fantasy aesthetic. So I'm looking forward to seeing how they mix it up. So Josh, do you have anything to say on this before we move on?
I'm a big fan of Will Arnett and Ashley Birch. I mean, Andy Samberg and Wanda Sykes are cool too, but like, I love Will Arnett and Ashley Birch. So I'm really excited that, you know, we're getting this big games, you know, starring them. And then like you guys were saying, I like the premise. I think lets it be a little more like untethered from, you know, the series. Mm-hmm. And I think that could be really exciting. It's a really easy way for it to explore and kind of do whatever it wants. And that's not just good for this game. That's also good for them to kind of, you know, kind of backdoor pilot like some ideas for the future too, because they could, you know, design like a little section that's like, oh, let's test this out, and then maybe people like it, maybe they don't, but worst case scenario, it's just like a little area in the game. But if people like it, then hey, let's do that in the next game or something. So I think that's really exciting.
Something else that's exciting from Summer Game Fest was Metal Slug Tactics.
It's like it looks
strategy
so good.
Version after the classic game. So Josh, what do you think?
I really like the graphics and aesthetic of Metal Slug. Like Metal Slug, Sonic the Hedgehog, and like Doom are like 3. I know those are all like really different, but like I just love like, you know, the font and the background art and just like the way those games look. And so I'm excited to get a new strategy game and everything, but I'm also just excited to get more Metal Slug because the games are just so cool. And I don't know, it kind of gives me hope for other IPs that we haven't seen do anything in forever. You know, like, what else is going
to
come back?
Can you think of a classic franchise that you'd like to twist into a different genre on the spot?
I would really like a Silent Hill game that is more like narrative driven, because I think the regular Silent Hill games are really cool and all, but I just mean like, how cool would it be if we got something like The Medium and like those first person kind of narrative adventures, but like in Silent Hill where they can just do story, you know, and like not as much of a stay alive combat kind of thing. You know, I'm talking like stuff like Amnesia, like imagine Silent Hill, but like that. I don't know. I want to see more horror stuff. So I guess that's probably my answer, but
yeah, my one would be Ratchet and Clank, but as a roguelite.
Dude, that would be cool.
Yeah.
Unlock new weapons and upgrades. And yeah, that'd be fun.
I've long said that a Pikmin roguelite is really where it's at.
That would be good.
But for Metal Slug Tactics, the narrative for me is that Dotemu is publishing this game. And that, I think, is so key, the way that we've seen this studio really come into its own, both as a developer with the excellent, excellent Streets of Rage 4, but now publishing both TMNT's Shredder's Revenge, which I can't wait for. And then this game, too, they're kind of, in my opinion, becoming an analog to a almost like a Yacht Club games, where they understand how to isolate, curate, and sort of bring to the forefront these smaller teams with these IP that are just that just understand what they're trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
In the way that Yacht Club found, you know, I think I forget the name of the developer, but for the way they found Cyber Shadow is what I'm seeing Dotemu start to do with different projects here, and that's really exciting. And I do think that they are the team that could facilitate more of these revivals, whether that they are more faithful, like a Shredder's Revenge in the style of the old TMNT games from the arcades, or something more, you know, unique like a Metal Slug Tactics. But this is a team to keep an eye on. I'm really sure of it.
Yeah.
So they might be able to get me Pokemon Trading Card Game 3.
That would be phenomenal. That would be awesome. Yeah, those games are so good.
So something else that's coming back is Death Stranding, the director's cut. I'm not a big fan of this game, but I don't know, it's cool that it's getting some sort of extended edition with new levels and scenes, I take it. Like, I also loved the trailer where they were kind of making fun of, like, Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah.
The guy going into the... Sam Porter Bridges going into the box, thinking, like, can I go under the box? But he didn't.
Yeah, almost like he was like, this is ridiculous, I can't hide in here.
No.
Abram, you're a fan. I gotta ask. I should add, I haven't played Death Stranding, so I don't really have an opinion on it. It looks like it could be neat, but I'm confused, and I think you probably could give this information to me, Chris, and our listeners. Wasn't the first game the director's cut? That's where I'm confused.
So
what's this gonna give us? What do you think?
Here's the problem, Josh. You have things a little bit twisted because I am far from a Death Stranding fan.
Oh, okay. When you suggested adding it to the doc, I thought maybe like, oh, he's a fan of okay.
I'm curious in this game's identity more than its actual gameplay. If it's a budget price, I would consider trying it again if it fine-tunes things a little bit. But I found Death Stranding pretentious in a way that didn't feel clever and just not particularly fun from a moment-to-moment level. And frankly, the perfect director's cut of that game for me is 80% shorter. So, and that's obviously not what it's going to be. It's interesting to see Kojima come back to this well, and it's interesting to see him so overtly reference Metal Gear. It kind of makes me wonder whether or not this is pointing towards that long rumored Blue Point Metal Gear Solid remake or anything, because I mean, frankly, I think that the context around this game is much more interesting than what it's probably going to manifest on a gameplay level.
What if they reveal a Metal Gear Solid remake within the game itself?
I wouldn't put it past anybody involved.
We could definitely do that.
And we've seen stuff like that, like with Wolfenstein and Doom. You could play old levels that were like from the old games in the new games. So like, there's you know what I mean? There's kind of a precedent for us seeing stuff like that. I could see Kojima doing that, even if it's just a section.
And Kojima's done that before with PT.
This is not an energy I want out in the universe, because I don't want to have to play Death Stranding the director's a cut to get this content.
New Metal Gear 6 is available exclusively in Death Stranding.
Yeah, you walked all this distance for a reason. This is your prize.
You get to an old arcade, and then you sit in a chair and play Metal Gear Solid.
let's move on to Ubisoft, because we're just like highlighting the games that kind of make, you know, that kind of stood out. There were others that were
we should mention, if we don't talk about a specific game,
genuinely good stuff.
Yeah. It's just because of time. We're not trying to leave off any games. And if we don't talk about something that you're interested in, please feel free to, you know, tweet at us or email us so we can talk about it.
Send us it during our questions, Fred, next week on the Active Quest show on Twitter. But first thing that came up for Ubisoft was Rainbow Six Extraction. There was a gameplay trailer. It was a big reveal And then a release date of September 16th, which is very, very soon. Like, mm-hmm. by the time you're listening to this, it'd be in 3 months.
Day one. I'm excited.
Yeah.
This is basically just Rainbow Six Siege mechanics, but in PvE instead of PvP. So mm-hmm. if anybody checked out Siege and went, oh, this is hard, I don't know if I like this, but like, other than that, thought it was, you know, cool or neat. Well, cool. Now you can take his mechanics and you can learn and play with friends against, you know, this like alien threat or whatever. And I really like this. I think this is so smart. Like, I seriously love this. Okay. So usually when a new game comes out, it kind of like ends the previous game, even if it's not intentional, like Call of Duty, you know, the new one comes out and the old lobbies kind of, you know, thin out. Well, what we're seeing with Ubisoft is they're tying Extraction and Siege into each other, where you don't have to play both if you don't want to, but it's the same kind of gameplay mechanics in both games. So you could almost practice for Siege while playing the PvE and Extraction with your friends, because it's the same. It's the same operators. It's the same, you know, it's the same kinds of attacks and tactics. And then on top of that, they've already done. They just introduced this earlier. I just wrote an article on it. They're giving you bonuses if you've played both games and stuff. So I really like that. Like, honestly, even if I didn't like these games, which I do like Rainbow Six a lot, I still like seeing like, hey, our new game's coming out, but it's going to add to the old game, and they're both going to keep happening. I think that's really cool, and I hope we see more of that.
Okay, cool. Also, I just forgot something. So we're actually going to rate the conferences each. So, what would you rate Summer Game Fest?
I give it a B. Okay. I think it was good. What do you think, Abram?
I feel like Jeff Keighley running it gives me a weird myopia, because I feel like it's better than what his conferences usually are, but I'm not sure what that really entails in general. I think he had a lot of really high-profile announcements, which I don't typically expect of the Game Awards, for instance, outside of a rare exception.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I still think that he doesn't quite nail the balance between the marketing, the announcements, the conversation. So I think on the back of the announcements opposed to the tenor of the showcase, I'd probably say a B minus is probably fair, similar to you, Josh.
I'd give it a B.
It was so much better than last year. Last year, I kind of thought it was mostly like his planning, but I think it was the pandemic, because this year it was a lot smoother, you know?
Mm-hmm. And there seemed to be like a real production to it. Like, I like the quality of it. I loved how they did the musical performances and how they intertwined the gameplay with the music.
Yeah.
I thought that was great, because it showcased the game, but also the music, and it was entertaining at the same time.
I liked Cute Animals and Weezer. Thought that was fun.
And the Sable performance was quite stirring, so
yeah.
I liked that too. But going back to Ubisoft, I think Rainbow Six Extraction looks fun. I'll be checking it out for sure.
Crossplay too, we can all play together.
Oh, really?
Yeah, full crossplay. And they're doing the same thing with Siege too. So you're and cross like save, like your profile goes across all devices.
That's
awesome. So like, you're not gonna have to have a separate account and separate progress. You just jump over and play. You know, I don't know. That's also cool. Like, I think that's the norm now. It used to be like, oh, cool, this is crossplay, but now it's like, oh, it doesn't have crossplay.
Yeah, Borderlands 3 isn't crossplay.
Oh,
PS5 and PS4.
Mario Rabbids was really exciting. It leaked that morning, but it was still cool to see more about it after Rainbow Six. I'm really excited for that. I loved the first game.
Yeah, it's called Spark of Hope. And it's bringing in like a space setting. It's got rabid Rosalina, who doesn't give a fuck about anything. Abram, you're the Nintendo guy.
Yes.
Are you excited for this?
Surprisingly so, because unlike you, Josh, I didn't really like the first game all that much. I don't have anything against the Rabbids. I actually enjoy a good Rabbids Go Home here and there, actually. I enjoyed those games in the Wii quite a bit. My problem with the original is that I think that it relied so heavily on how peculiar its crossover was. I think a lot of the aesthetic and the charm of the game was because it's the Mario and it's Mario universe and the Rabbids, and the gameplay was okay, but I think the level design started to lose the plot a little bit in the back half. So what I was impressed by in Sparks of Hope is it looks to me like they're truly building on the foundation and coming into their own. I feel like the narrative isn't so reliant on the conceit. It's more about introducing new characters, bring it to a bigger scope. It feels like the gameplay has been, they talk about this action focus, and we see it by removing the grid-based system. It just seems like a lot of what I felt was kind of standard or uninteresting about Kingdom Battle is being converted into something that feels truly unique and special. So I'm really on board for this game. When I was fairly cold off of the leak, seeing the game, seeing the cinematic, the gameplay, hearing the developers talk and their passion, it's really sparked something within me, I suppose you could say, and I'll definitely be checking it out.
So what do you mean by it going more action-focused and a lack of a grid system? Is it different to Kingdom Battle? Because I was writing something while this came up, I think.
What we know so far is that the battles are probably still turn-based, but you're not on a grid anymore. You basically have like an open arena which you can move around. You still have like a boundary of how far you can move, but you can be more active. Like we see Rabbit Peach pick up a Bob Bomb and throw it at an enemy and then move around back into cover and everything. So It's not as standard in terms of tactical RPG combat this time around, which I think is going to go a long way to informing more interesting game design, which was kind of my issue with the first game.
That makes me think of Eternal Sonata, if you've ever played that.
The game was really neat. I want that game to come back.
Mm-hmm. Game is craving for a remaster.
Even just because
that game's beautiful.
Yeah, like even if they just like did like the Mass Effect type thing, like they had an AI clean it up and then just re-release it. That'd be cool.
And then Ubisoft's biggest game and probably a huge disappointment to many, Avatar: Frontiers of Pandora. It's open world, first person action game set in the Avatar universe from James Cameron, not The Last Airbender, which would have been a huge improvement. It's based in the western area of Pandora that hasn't been seen in the film. It has a 2022 release date. So, Abram, did this stand out to you? Am I wrong?
Well, I think the game looks very pretty.
It looks gorgeous. Yeah.
And I think that they're kind of aiming for a 2015 Battlefront-esque release strategy in the sense that Avatar 2 is allegedly finally releasing next December. So I think what we'll probably see is this will tie in not directly from a narrative level, but just from a universe level and release at a similar time. I'd imagine this is Ubisoft's holiday title next year. But the reason I really draw the Star Wars analog is because what's most disappointing to me is that Massive is making a Star Wars game. But if Massive doesn't have this title coming out until next holiday, well, then my Star Wars is probably several years away.
Yeah.
And frankly, I can't help but think about more interesting things that could be happening opposed to an Avatar game, which just feels out of time. But we'll see. Maybe James Cameron and the Disney apparatus will kind of goose a little bit of life back into the franchise. I don't know. I doubt it, but we'll see.
I don't know. I just have that feeling it's going to be like a big flop next year.
I think this is the first like really big kind of film tie-in. I know it's not quite a film tie-in, but you know, like Abram was saying, we haven't seen this kind of thing in a long time outside of Battlefront releasing near Star Wars. But like, I think that's probably why we're so nervous, because when we were growing up and they would do a game based off a movie or tying into a movie, it usually was just like a collect-a-thon and it wasn't very good, you know? So I don't know. That might be why we're kind of nervous about it. I'm kind of indifferent to Avatar. I haven't seen it since I saw it in theaters in 2010 or whatever. Like, and I didn't like hate it. It was just like that was neat. That was cool. So I'm willing to give the game a shot. I just don't have any expectations, you know. And like Abram said too, that means Star Wars probably 2023, 2024, and that was one of the games I was really hoping to see, because even if it was just like a 30-second like CGI trailer, I just wanted something talking about it. We didn't get
anything. They could have multiple teams.
Yeah.
I think that the tenor around the license game is a little bit different. I think that these companies are smarter and more cognizant of the fact that that sort of sixth generation, low budget 3D platformer, 3D action game doesn't fly anymore. So we see a company like Disney be very strategic about giving, okay, let's give these Marvel IP to Square Enix. Let's give these to Insomniac, you know.
Yeah.
We didn't see the smartest deals cut with Star Wars, but I think that these companies are constantly learning. If we're going to do games, we've got to do them right. So my hesitation around the game is just more from, I think that the IP is a non-starter. I don't necessarily think that Massive is a problem. I think the Division games are pretty good, actually. So
yeah,
we'll just see. I just don't know if it's the right IP.
It could be a good game of it in and of itself, and it could be better than the movie. I don't know.
Could be.
Yeah. Then let's go on to this train wreck. Gearbox.
Well, I guess before we move on, what would you rate Ubisoft?
Oh, right, yeah, I keep forgetting about that. Ubisoft, probably give a B-.
Yeah.
And that's, I don't know. That's being generous.
I'd probably say C. Like, it wasn't bad. It wasn't, like, amazing. For me, it was good enough, you know? It was what it needed to be, but...
So, in my high school, at least, you could pass with a D. So, I'm going to give Ubisoft a D, because it was a passing showcase. But I just don't think that it needed to be as long as it was. I don't think that a lot popped. It was a lot of updates, which is totally understandable considering the context that this showcase happened in. But a big theme for me, and we'll get into it as we get into later showcases, is publishers showed up with nothing to say and said stuff anyway. And I feel like Ubisoft is a case where they had a little bit to say, sure, but I don't think they delivered it particularly well.
Yeah, less can be more, and I think these companies were like, no, it's got to be a big event. And it's like, well, yeah, but not time-wise. You can make this a 20-minute thing, and you're done.
Do you think the ESA was poking them for E3 presentation?
That's actually, yeah, maybe.
I think companies were giving money to the ESA to make sure the ESA still does what they do. You know, I think there was a lot of, let's keep this boat afloat, opposed to, we need to be here, because Ubisoft has held forward events without the ESA. You know, I think that there's definitely some politicking going on to the way that E3 actually went down this year.
We'll get to it later, but I feel like if anybody was dragged to E3, it was Capcom. Like, we don't have anything to say. You come up here right now and you talk to them about the games.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, God. Now we're going to talk about Gearbox.
I'll be honest, I didn't watch Gearbox, so I'll let you guys talk about it.
I didn't watch it.
I was just busy, and then I found out later it was okay that I missed it.
I'm gonna briefly mention what happened. So there's, like, oh my God, Randy Pitchford, for the CEO of Gearbox.
Yeah, the creepy musician. Like,
he's kind of creepy. But, like, from what he's done, allegedly, in the past.
The flash drive and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. But he was strolling around the set of the Borderlands movie, and he was pestering everyone. And, like, you could tell from the interviews he was doing that, like, they did not want to be there. They did not want to talk to this guy. They were just like that.
For them, this guy's bugging them at work, and they're just like, get out of my hair.
Like, they're just, the facial expressions just said it all.
I saw your Kevin Hart meme. That was really funny. Kevin Hart didn't want to talk to him.
Kevin Hart's just looking at the camera going like, what the fuck?
Like, why is this?
Why am I here? What's going on? And then there was like this really strange kind of video editing going on around it that was very immature, and I don't know.
It reminded me of the Disney Channel movie Surfers. Remember that? Remember that weird editing style where it just kind of chopped? Yeah. It was choppy. Yeah, it reminded me of that. The few seconds I saw.
But I would say that whole, like, it went on and on. Like, it went on for like 8 minutes, and then they showed a few things from the presentation, and they went back to him with Kevin Hart. Like, later on, and we were everyone who was watching went like, oh my God. So yeah, that whole interview with the people that are making the movie was just like the most awkward thing I've ever seen from E3, even more awkward than the Konami stuff, I'd say.
Also, the Godfall announcement's really weird. Like, I don't know what, even if that was gonna happen, I don't understand why that was an E3 thing. Like, that's like something that could have been a press release.
Godfall is coming to PS4. That was the announcement they made. And there's going to be an expansion coming towards it as well. And then, lastly, they kept bringing this up like 3 or 4 times during the presentation. It was just hilarious. It's Homeworld 3 is in production. They treated it like a big deal. It was funny. But I guess you have to take my word for it. I would rate this as an F. This was awful. Absolutely awful. If I could give an F-, I would give it an F-. It's probably the worst E3 presentation of all time. It's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. And they have very little to announce. So at least Konami had stuff to show in 2010. So next up, I hope you guys have watched this one. Devolver. They had a really cool E3 showing.
Oh, yeah, again, there's a lot.
They were making fun of the industry as well.
They were making fun
of like the Xbox Game Pass and stuff like that. And,
they had it was called Devolver Max Pass Plus, and it was it's a free subscription service that lets you buy games.
Yeah,
and then every time they announced the game, it was like premium purchase. Like, it was so good.
I don't know. Did any games from Devolver stand out to you?
Yeah, for me, definitely. I didn't know what to expect going into it. I don't know if that affected it for me at all. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if there were leaks or anything, but if there were, I didn't see anything. But I really like, you've actually got the ones down that I'm really excited about. Inscription looks really cool to me. It's like a deck building roguelite game, but then like it also seems like you're in like Saw, because there's like weird fucking escape room puzzle type stuff. I don't know. It looks cool. And then also Death's Door looks really, really cool, and I cannot wait to play that.
And that's like a top-down kind of Zelda-like kind of experience where you're like using your sword against enemies, and it's kind of like it's got this like gothic art style. It looks really cool.
And the premise, you're like a crow collecting souls or something. I don't know. It just looks weird. I can't wait to play that.
Looks sweet. And then Tractor Yomi looked gorgeous. It looked like a Ghost of Tsushima in 2D. And it had like this very, very striking black and white art style. I'm looking forward to that one too. Was there anything from Devolver that you're interested in, Abram?
So I didn't. This is one of the other few showcases. I watch almost all of them, but this one I've never seen any of Devolver's showcases. It's kind of like Blaze Ball, where I don't know what it is and I'm afraid to ask. So I love Devolver as a publisher. I think they do excellent work. And the titles look good. I will probably play most, if not all of them, when they release. But, you know, E3 is very busy, and I only have so much time to watch and write and cover stuff. So, unfortunately, I had to make some cuts somewhere. But Death's Door, I'm definitely going to play. Of those, it's definitely the one I'm most interested in.
And I think I'll have a preview up of Death's Door on some sort of website. I think it's going to be on Retroware. But I'll also talk about it on the Active Quest later.
For me, that was an A. I mean, there was nothing. Their humor, take it like whether you like it or not, it was wrapped into it well, and the pacing was pretty good, and the games were good. So I think it might be a preference thing, and maybe everyone doesn't like the games. But I mean, like, as far as what they're there to do, they did it, and it was a good show.
Yeah, I would go the same way. Every game they showed was intriguing.
And they knew when to be quiet. A lot of these conferences don't know. They just keep going and going. And it's like, no, that's all you got. Stop. There's nothing else to say.
Exactly.
Move on. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's move on to the big daddy of them all, Xbox and Bethesda's showcase. They just came out swinging with the first announcement, Starfield. The next RPG from the guys who made Skyrim and Fallout 4, whatever. Starfield is going to come out on November 11th. Yeah, 2022.
I thought that was a couple years away. That was really shocking to me to see November 2022.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
I love sci-fi. But my thought about Starfield is the same as my thought about almost all of these games. I don't need to see them. I don't need trailers. I don't need anything, because Xbox is playing a fundamentally different game than everybody else. E3 is a marketing machine. It's about generating hype. It's about generating interest. But all these games are coming to Game Pass. I already have access to every game they talked about today. So for me, a critique I saw a lot of for the showcase as a whole, and specifically Starfield, was, they didn't show us anything, right? But ultimately, it's a new Bethesda IP. It's in space, and I already have access to it through Game Pass.
Yeah, so I don't need to decide if I'm going to buy it. I can play it.
Yeah. The hype, the interest comes from now me trying it myself. So I think that, to show my hand about the entire press conference, Microsoft showed up and did exactly what they needed to do. They told us why you should be in their ecosystem and why you should always have a renewed Game Pass subscription. So I was really impressed.
Right. For me, I want to get convinced by Xbox. I want to see gameplay. I want to see, you know, these big titles come into Xbox Game Pass so it can convince me to finally get an Xbox Series S or X. You know, I want to get into that ecosystem, and I want them to like bring me in. Like, it's so compelling, it's so appealing, but there's only so much I can do with my PC. You know, so I really want them to show stuff, and they're beginning to do that, and I'm excited for the future of Xbox.
I really liked VGC's article. They had an article that was basically Xbox, I forgot the exact wording, it was better than I'm gonna butcher it, but it was like Xbox showed up ready to fight but their opponent wasn't there or something. Like, they put on a really good show. In fact, I saw a lot of people that are usually kind of indifferent to Xbox that were like, right on, this was cool. I know we'll see something from PlayStation soon, but it was just kind of, I think it was kind of telling, and it kind of showed what we might see this generation, which is Xbox is ready. They've got what people want to play, and PlayStation's in the corner being quiet about what's coming out soon. And they're kind of doubling down on, and I like PlayStation. I just am pointing out the difference I'm seeing. PlayStation's like quadrupling down on these giant experiences, whereas on Xbox's show, I saw a variety of experiences. I saw, you know, all kinds of different things that are coming. And to me, that's more compelling than we've got the best action adventure camera behind the character games out there, which I like those games. I've got a stash of The Last of Us Part Two right behind me, but it's just, you know, I like the Xbox is like a, it's like a candy machine. Like, I don't know what I'm going to get, and it's all in Game Pass. That's really compelling to me.
And I like that. No, they're correct. Like, it is the most diverse lineup in gaming right now. There's all sorts of different things. Like, you wouldn't expect Psychonauts 2 to be published by Sony, right? Like, Xbox is bringing out these unique games while also releasing AAA titles. Like, we used to see that from PlayStation 5 to 10 years ago, but now Xbox is doing that. And
I'm glad you brought that up, because yeah, a lot of these games, I would have expected these to be on PS4 if it was earlier. Like, 12 Minutes, that would have been a PS4 game.
Yeah.
Psychonauts, same thing. Party Animals, same thing. Like, Somerville, same thing. Like, these are the kinds of experiences that I used to get, you know, from PlayStation. I think I'm the only Halo fan here, so I'm just gonna say Halo Infinite looks... Oh, you are too, Abram? Okay.
I love Halo.
Doesn't this look great? I'm really excited for this.
So, I have played very little Halo multiplayer. I love the campaigns. I'll just run those campaigns all day.
Yeah.
And so, I really like the narrative concept of a new AI construct replacing Cortana.
And it's like they were kind of afraid to replace her for a while. So I'm glad that they're kind of jumping, you know?
Yeah, I think that the 343 games, in my opinion, got better, because I think 5 was 343 stepping out of Bungie's shadow and making their own Halo experience.
Yeah.
And now that they're returning so much the tenets of earlier Bungie Halo games, I'll be interested to see if they can retain their own identity. And for me, what we saw was a really great fusion. And from the people I know who I follow and listen to who are more multiplayer integrated, it was a great showcase. So on the whole, I really think that 343 really showed up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do too.
The biggest thing that I'm excited about with the multiplayer too, as someone who plays a bunch of the Halo multiplayer, is that 4 and 5 had good multiplayer. They just didn't feel like Halo multiplayer. And this looks like Halo multiplayer. So it's like, it's kind of like a return to... It looks like they're trying to be creative and different in the areas that make sense to. But then they're holding on to what makes sense to hold on to. Kind of like God of War 2018. Like, it was different, but it was also God of War. And that's important.
What I found exciting about the gameplay was that the inclusion of the grappling hook.
Oh, that's
like
so cool.
Grappling things on the ground, you know, like stray weapons, like grenades. You name it, you know, I thought it looked super cool, and like it added to the kind of like the flow of the game that's usually like pretty stiff, right?
It's the synthesis of like the Halo 3 sandbox with the faster Halo 4, Halo 5 enhanced mobility style, but in the way that those two identities don't feel like they're at odds with each other. It feels like it really was carefully decided what element from each game should come back. I am my one point of concern is that we didn't get a release date, and I am nervous about this one slipping.
I feel like
they can. Be a bummer.
I feel like here's what I think they did. I think that they probably could have released this in the spring. I feel like they probably gave themselves extra time to make sure that they hit it. Is what I'm thinking, because if they, here's where I'm coming from with that. If they could have released it at the Series XS launch, but they didn't, that tells me that like this was ready to go then, but they're just making it better. You know what I mean? So that's the only reason I'm not as nervous about it. But yeah, I do wish they would have been like, hey, this is coming out November 5th, 2021, instead of just holiday. But I don't know.
I think we don't have a release date yet because like all hands are on deck of that game. That's what I've been hearing from Jeff Grubb.
The team looks tired. Everybody that was on screen talking about Halo looked exhausted.
Yeah, they look knackered, yeah, so.
Redfall, I know we got to move on, but I want to bring up Redfall. Redfall looks, I think that's the one I'm most excited about, probably outside of 12 Minutes, Somerville, and Halo. Like, I almost just said Halo, but then I jammed those two in because I'm really excited about those. But yeah. Redfall looks really exciting. I know that, Chris, I know you like gameplay. I know we didn't get gameplay, but like, it's coming out next summer, so we're probably going to get gameplay soon. I feel like they probably just didn't want to let this show go without being like, oh, and guess what we're working on? Like, this looks fucking cool.
I know. It's just like, I love the concept. Like, fighting vampires in rural kind of US. That's kind of a cool idea.
Yeah.
And, like, all the different powers that they displayed were interesting, especially the magic user. That's definitely going to be my class. But, yeah, Redfall is an exciting new IP. That's what we need more in the industry is like new IP that's like AAA, but I feel like it's gonna be like another game like Outriders or Destiny or, you know, like another live service kind of multiplayer title.
What gives me hope is Arcane Austin. Like, they're the ones that made Dishonored and Prey. Like, if you just showed me this trailer, I would assume it was an upcoming BioWare game. And I love BioWare, but I also am afraid of BioWare because I know what they're unfortunately also capable of doing because of EA's leadership. And, you know, tight, you know, fist or whatever around their stuff. But, like, the fact this is coming from the guys who made Prey and Dishonored makes me like, oh, this is probably going to be really, like, stylish and, like, slick.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Yeah, it could be really cool.
Abram, any standouts for you?
So Halo is a big standout for me, obviously, Starfield. Jack Sparrow in Sea of Thieves. I am a huge Pirates of the Caribbean fan since I was little, and I was reacting to this with Tucker, and the trailer starts, and I go, she sounds like Tia Dalma, and he goes, what the hell are you talking about? And then I felt very vindicated and very excited when that got confirmed, so that was super cool. But I think perhaps the biggest standout from the indie side certainly was Replaced, that really stunning cyberpunk-inspired HD 2D-looking title. I love that aesthetic. I think that's so compelling. So that was another standout for me.
For me, Battlefield 2042 looked outstanding.
It looks so good.
Like, the fidelity is amazing, but also I love the hook of, like, the storm kind of raging through the map.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like Levolution, I guess. They brought that back from Battlefield 3 or 4.
For a long time, it kind of felt like, oh yeah, let's see what Battlefield's doing. It won't be on the same level as Call of Duty. But like, feels like now they're like competing again. That's exciting.
Yeah, I think they are. And I correct me if I'm wrong, but is this going to be a Battle Royale as well? Is this going to have a mode dedicated to that?
They didn't say Battle Royale. I think they actually said there wasn't a Battle Royale, but there's like something similar with that storm. Like, we don't know what, but what I think is going to happen is it's going to be kind of like a big deathmatch that moves, that a storm is forcing people to move around a bigger map. That's what I think it's probably going to be. So it's probably going to capture some Battle Royale energy, but I think they said it's not going to have a Battle Royale.
Right. I'm just going to run through the rest of these here. So Forza Horizon 5 is set in Mexico. It releases November 9th, 2021. And I think it looks absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
Like the graphics are absolutely insane. Like, one-to-one from real life at this point. You know, with the rock faces and, like, the multiple kind of different locations you'll find in Mexico. Contraband, a new multiplayer co-op game from the Just Cause developer. Yakuza Like a Dragon's is now on Xbox Game Pass. You can find it there. And Josh, answer my question for me. What is Xbox Game Pass?
It's the best deal.
It is indeed.
It used to be the best deal in gaming, but then they bought Bethesda and it was like, okay, it's just the best deal.
It's just the best deal. It's better than Netflix, right?
I think so. Dude, Netflix is expensive now. It's like almost $20 a month.
Oh, jeez, really?
Yeah. I don't understand it.
Wow. Yeah. 12 Minutes. That's going to come out August 19th, 2021. Hades is finally heading to Xbox on August 13th, 2021.
Wanted to mention this, too.
Xbox Game Pass.
That's also coming to PlayStation the same day.
Yes, it is. Yep. And that's fantastic. And then Back for Blood. Huge title here is going to be on Xbox Game Pass. It's going to be, it's similar to the likes of like Left 4 Dead,
see,
but with a card basis.
I know exactly what Abram was saying earlier. I felt that too, because when they were showing the gameplay, I'm like, well, I don't need to see it. I'm going to play it. It's going to be on Game Pass.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need to tell me anything else. So it's good. I'm just going to play it. Mm-hmm. Like, as soon as I hear it's on Game Pass, I'm like, okay, I don't want to hear anything else about it because I'll just check it out, you know? Yeah, so, Back 4 Blood looks good.
How would you rate this, fellow Spartans?
This was an A for me.
A, yeah.
Yeah, this was an A conference for me, and the reason is because this is finally the manifestation of what Microsoft has been moving towards. Especially if you pair this with some of the stuff that came out on the Xbox Wire earlier in the week about into being more focused on cloud gaming and making these other entry points into the ecosystem and lowering the walls a little bit. This was the component that has been missing, the games. Now we have the Microsoft money and the infrastructure and the content that's going to fuel it. Now we're in a situation where there's going to be at least one major tentpole title to subscribe to Game Pass for, whether that's Halo Infinite or your Forza or whatever. And then all of a sudden, here's 28 other games that make it really hard to turn off that auto-renew on Game Pass. Yeah. You'll need to get in once. The way I think about it is like, I have HBO Max right now, so I could watch the Snyder Cut, but I don't cancel it because there's always just something else on the horizon that I want. And that's all that has to happen. You just got to be strung along. And I think Xbox did that. They showed me, yeah, I should be invested in this ecosystem. I should stay there. And that's really big. They came with a mission and they accomplished it.
Like, if you weren't that into games, I think you could just get Xbox Game Pass and you'll be set for the rest of the year.
Well, and also this wasn't at the show, but like a few days before the show, they're working on a smart TV app. Like that is brilliant. That's how you get everybody over the age of 60 into Game Pass, because like I can go to my parents and be like, hey, look, there's an app on your TV. Here's an Xbox controller. You can play games. And they're going to be like, what? Like, I don't have to buy an expensive game. So that's huge. Cause like, you know, for you, me and Abram and a lot of other people that like we work with and interface with, we don't mind buying a game system. We know we're going to use it. But a lot of people, they're like at the store. You've seen them before. They're at Walmart or Target. They're looking at the games, but then they don't get anything just because they're like, this looks neat. But then they, you know, they see the cost to entry and they're like, oh, I don't know. But yeah, that's the smart TV thing is pretty big.
Do you think we'll ever see cloud games on Xbox One?
Yeah, they just talked about that. Really? Microsoft Flight Simulator is going to be on Xbox One through the cloud.
Wow. Okay.
They also talked on the Xbox Wire about this really compelling concept of like stream before you download, essentially. Which is cool. So smart. I mean, because even now, having access to Game Pass on my Series S, yeah, I'd like to try this game, but also my Wi-Fi is not super fast, so maybe I would rather prioritize that bandwidth to something else. So again, having another way to lower the barriers between the player and the content is so important, and Xbox is just doing that. Again, because they have Microsoft's enormous purse behind them, which can fund this, which is why I don't think we really see it in anyone else's ecosystem, but it makes Xbox so unique.
For me, PlayStation is a lot like Nintendo now, where I want to buy their system, play their games, but I don't want to do anything else on that system. Yeah. And that's not me putting down PlayStation. It's just, for me, PlayStation is PlayStation. Nintendo is Nintendo. Anything else, I'd rather do it over here, because that's where I'm doing everything else anyway. Like, Microsoft created such a compelling place to hang out that I just want to hang out there whenever I can, you know? I don't mind grabbing the Pro controller or the PlayStation controller to play on those systems, but like, I'm not going to play something on there that's on Xbox for me. And I think what we're kind of seeing is, for the last 6 or 7 years, PlayStation's been working on like games, and then Xbox has been working on everything else while working on games. So like, for a couple of years, it was like, yeah, we don't have the exclusives, but like, you know, we've got frame rates, we've got power, and we've got the cloud, and we've got this. They were kind of building everything else, like competing with everything that PlayStation wasn't doing. And so they were able to kind of put up almost like a defense against like Amazon Luna and Google Stadia, which Google Stadia mentioned that the Bethesda deal is actually what really hurt Stadia too, because they were planning on doing a lot of stuff with Bethesda. It's just like, it's really interesting because for me, both these systems complement each other so well. Like, it's like Xbox isn't even competing with PlayStation. They're competing with everything else. And so I think having a PlayStation and an Xbox puts you in a really good spot.
Yeah. So I don't know how much time you have, Abram.
I'm good.
Chris, you got to rate it. You didn't rate it yet.
Oh, I didn't rate it? No. Oh, dear. I've been trying to avoid it. I would say B+, because I wanted more gameplay, personally.
I do want to quickly say, too, I saw a lot of people online saying, well, it was only good because of Bethesda. That might be true, but that's Xbox now. So, like, that's not really something that you can really, you know, you can't really have that qualifier.
Exactly, yeah.
You know,
and, like, some of the Xbox Game Pass announcements were really cool. So, I'll be playing, by the way, I'll be playing Yakuza Like a Dragon over the next few weeks. If I have time for it.
It's so good.
Yeah,
it's so
good. And I'm glad now that I didn't have to spend $60 on it.
So Square Enix's show's next, and that one was kind of weird for me because, like, I didn't like the show that much, but what they showed was good. Like, Abram was talking earlier about how, like, Summer Game Fest, like, had some good stuff, but, like, the tenor was always, or not always, super. For me, that's how Square Enix was a lot.
I think the show is a disaster, frankly.
Really?
Yeah, really? I think that it completely missed the mark for its audience. I think that Final Fantasy Pixel Collection was just not what it was. It was a clear and strategic move, but not one that serviced its audience. I think that Final Fantasy Origins, not just from a graphical perspective, but just from like a systemic design perspective, looks like it's been percolating for like a decade. I really think that Guardians was the one thing here that really impressed me when, you know, we just saw Life is Strange. We just saw it back at the last, you know, Square Enix presentation. We just saw Blood on Marvel's Avengers, and it's too late for that game. Hawkeye didn't push the needle. I don't think that this is going to either. I think that Square Enix just came to show what they had, irrespective of what the audience wanted.
Almost like Nintendo does sometimes, where like this is what we're doing. And it's like, well, I don't want to build stuff out of cardboard. Too bad.
Yeah.
Build stuff out of cardboard. I don't understand. Can you guys, I don't know a lot about this. Maybe you guys can tell me. The Final Fantasy Pixel games, are those only coming to PC and mobile?
Yes.
Okay, I really want to play those on Switch. I don't want to play those on PC or mobile.
The problem is that those games are available, albeit in butchered versions, on PC and mobile, but they're nowhere to be found on PlayStation, Xbox, Nintendo, the systems where these games have lineages, you know? So it was just...
Because I was really excited about that until they said PC mobile only, or at least that's what I understood at the time, and you confirmed it. I was like, well, wait, I want to get the... Like, I was waiting for that Switch logo. Like, I want to play these on Switch.
It just feels very corporate, because I think... If I have to think of, like, their point of view, like, everyone who grew up with those games, like, 1 to 6, they're older now, you know? And they think, oh, well, that's the casual audience, right? Like, everyone who's in the casual audience has a PC. Everyone who is in the casual audience has a mobile device, you know?
Yeah, it does.
That's how I feel about it, yeah.
Honestly, this conference would have been really kind of more poor and for me if it weren't for Guardians. I think Guardians looks absolutely incredible. That's a day one buy for me. As I was watching the trailer, I was like, why didn't the Avengers do this? Like, this is what not even just the games as service thing, because that stuff can be done right, like, you know, some games do, like Destiny and stuff, but like, I don't know, the presentation just didn't seem to be this good on Avengers, you know what I mean? Like, this felt like they like just really poured in like on all the details and the characters, and like it just felt more convincing. Whereas the Avengers, whenever I saw footage of it, it looked like people playing dress up as the Avengers. It didn't feel like the real thing. I don't know.
The Avengers had kind of like a weird feel to it, but I also feel like the story was a very appealing, like, as Kamala Khan has this like coming of age story that was super endearing, you know.
That's what they should have focused on in the
marketing and the development of the game. They shouldn't have gone for like this multiplayer games as a service title, because you can't have loot with a superhero.
Yeah. Well, and before I assumed Disney like made them do that, but then I'm seeing this game and I'm like, well, this clearly has been in development longer than the, you know, like for several years. So it's like Square Enix, that they actively decide to do games as a service with the Avengers. Or maybe it was just the concession. Disney said you can do a single player game like Guardians, but you have to do, you know, I just really wish we could know like what led to these two very different games coming from the same publisher. It's really bizarre.
Yeah, it seems to me like Avengers was a corporate construction of let's greenlight this game when Destiny is picking up and Division is picking up. But it was a flawed premise from the beginning. Chris, I totally agree with you. The concept of loot with a third-person superhero action title doesn't really fit. Crystal Dynamics was never the right team to make this game because, again, I played a little bit of Avengers, and I thought that the story was pretty solid, again, because that sort of action-adventure is where Crystal Dynamics has cut its teeth on the Tomb Raider titles. And so it was just always a corporate mismatch of developer and IP and structure. But when we look at Guardians, I think that things are a little bit more in harmony, right? Eidos Montreal, I really enjoyed Shadow of the Tomb Raider. I think that they're going to really knock the third-person action format out of the park. I think that they were scared off by how poorly Avengers did. So we know no microtransactions, all kinds of things. That's out. Single-player focused game. My only concerns, and this is one of my games of the show, so they're concerns opposed to really red flags, like when I first saw Avengers, is I want those narrative choices to matter. I don't want them to just be flavor. And I'm curious what's going to happen between combat and narrative beats. I hope that traversal is compelling, but on the whole, I think the game looks really strong, and like Josh said, it's a day one for me.
Mm-hmm. And I saw some criticism over like how it looked, like the gameplay was a little laggy at times, but I think that's a really bad kind of like criticism to make at this point, because once again, it's early. 4 months is when they finally put polish on.
Plus, what we saw is probably a build from like 2 months ago or something. You know, like the way that this stuff works, they put this together while they were still working on the game.
Exactly, and I feel like yes, we can criticize it when it comes out, but right now, I don't think we should. I don't think that's particularly fair on the developers.
Also, people keep doing that, and guess what? If you guys keep criticizing games because they don't look perfect when they're still being made, that's how you get reveal trailers with logos. Developers aren't going to keep showing you games that are a work in progress if you go, hey, that looks like a work in progress. They're thinking, yeah, no shit. Like, that's what always happens to them. Like, they're kind of damned either way. They show the game, and it's bad. It's shit. It's garbage. It doesn't look good. They don't show the game, and it's like, oh, you didn't even show the game. And, like, no matter what, these developers are, like, stuck, and I just feel bad for them because no matter what they do, they'll throw an alpha tag at the bottom of the screen and say, this is not what it looks like when it comes out. And people will still speculate like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to buy that because it doesn't look finished. And it drives me crazy because, like I said, the same people that do that are the same ones that are like, what? No gameplay? Not always, but, you know, a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like it has a great story as well from what we've been shown with the trailer and the gameplay footage so far. Like it feels like they got the comedy correct.
What's the DC game coming out? The Suicide Squad, is that what it is?
Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League.
Yeah, and what's the other one?
Gotham Knights.
Gotham Knights. Yeah. This looks like it's going to be even better than those, but those look really cool too. Like I'm excited. I was worried for a while. I thought we were just going to get the Avengers and stuff like that. And I'm not trying to just like put that game down. It's just I want to see games like Guardians. You know, I want to see these exciting, big narrative. Like, this is what I want. I mean, they're based off comic books. Like, we've got, like, decades of stories to pull from. Let's make them into games. Like, so I don't know. I'm excited about the possibilities alone, you know, just from seeing this game.
Mm-hmm. I'm not very excited for the possibilities of this next game here, Babylon's Fall. It looks pretty atrocious. Like, just from the watercolor kind of like painterly style to kind of like the generic looking combat. I don't know. I'm not a fan of this one.
I'm not either. I think that Platinum is such a skilled developer that would probably benefit from maybe a more rigid production schedule where we weren't working on a billion games with different sub teams. You know, I think that you look at, let's go from Astral Chain to, you know, a Wonderful 101 to this and all of the different projects, and Platinum makes games that are largely good to great, but could be excellent if we just had a little bit more focus. And I just feel like Babylon's Fall is both the excess of that problem and also another instance, like with the Avengers, where we're going after this games as a service model, which probably is not where Platinum's wheelhouse is. So I'm concerned about it for sure.
I think we're at that point where everyone's found their games as a service title and doesn't want to pick up anything else. You know, it's just like the MMO kind of craze, you know, with when World of Warcraft came out, everyone wanted to make their own MMO, but they didn't pick up any other MMOs because they're super into World of Warcraft still.
Yeah. Same thing with Destiny, too. Oh, here comes a big Destiny killer, and you look over and everyone's still playing Destiny. It's like, I don't know. I don't think it's going to kill Destiny.
So do you think Babylon's Fall is going to be all that bad?
I'm sure it's going to be fine. And I think that's the problem.
I just don't understand. Yeah, it just looks kind of... It doesn't look very special. It just kind of looks... I don't know.
Yeah, and if you're making a live service title, you have to put it out the bag first day one, right? So, yeah, I don't think this is going to do very well. Especially if it's, like, to the same quality of The Legend of Korra or, you know, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle
Isn't
games.
Isn't Platinum making it? Why aren't they making Bayonetta 3? Aren't they working on that?
Yeah, like Platinum has multiple teams on different stuff. So
okay, well, they should cancel this game and they should make Bayonetta 3 come out sooner. Right?
I agree. That's exactly what Abrams' point was, and I have to agree. Last one that kind of disappointed as well, Stranger of Paradise, Final Fantasy Origin. It's going to come to all major platforms in 2022. A demo was kind of released, but it doesn't work. It says it's corrupted.
Is it fixed now? I thought today I was seeing people
still. I saw people posting stuff about it. I think it's working now.
It's working? Okay, but it was kind of a weird release.
Yeah, it wasn't at the same time when it came out. Yeah.
The trailer said the demo is coming soon, but then it came out the same day, so it wasn't soon. And then once people downloaded the demo, it was corrupted. So it was like a PR disaster, wasn't it? And then you have this trailer, which kind of looks like Devil May, like makes this game that like Devil May Cry. It has like that punk attitude to it that you'd see from that kind of game. And then it tries to like mutate that with Final Fantasy 1 kind of like storylines. So it doesn't really make sense. Like you have this like big fantasy world, like the classic fantasy kind of game mixed in with this like edgy kind of like emo cast of characters. You know, it's kind of strange, and I didn't think the combat looked particularly good either. So what do you guys think of this? Chaos.
My problem was that it looks more DMC than Devil May Cry 5. I think that we're in an era where character action games have gotten so high fidelity, so fast, so stylish, that it didn't really look like that to me. And the initial leak suggested that this was going to be more Souls, drawing on, you know, the Neo influence, but I didn't really see that either. It just seems like it's trapped in a space between spaces that feels old. Again, I'd like to try the demo because I invite Final Fantasy to try new ideas in terms of tone and everything and style, but it just doesn't look like the execution is there to support the concept, in my opinion.
Yeah, and the character designs are very strange as well. Like, the main character is just wearing a plain black shirt that you could get. Like, I laughed my ass off. I think it was, like, Maximilian Dude or something. He said that it looked like he came straight from Old Navy.
Oh, yeah, that was really funny.
I don't know about this game, but I will try the demo, and we'll talk about it later on the podcast. Probably next week. I'm gonna just run through this next one here. Oh wait, Score.
D.
D. Yeah, I'd give it a D too. Because
if it would have just shown Guardians and then walked away, then it would have been A. You know what I mean? Like, it's okay to not show stuff. You don't need to go, hey, remember Life is Strange? We told you about that yesterday. Well, now we're talking about it again.
They did show off the remaster collection for the first time and looked really quite stunning, actually. So I'm excited for that. But I would give it a D as well. Yeah. So just
I'm trying to imagine people looking at the remaster that didn't play the original game and going, this is improved. Because I love Life is Strange, but the graphics and stuff in the first game definitely aren't, you know, super strong. Yeah. Like, I'm saying it does look better, but, like, that tells you how bad the original game kind of looked.
But. So some neat things that came from limited run games. Plumbers Don't Wear Ties gets a physical and digital release this year on Switch, PC, and PS4. It was, like, this really horrendous FMV game. That wasn't actually a video, it was like a slideshow, and it had this like awful it's probably the worst game of all time. It's like, if I had to compare it to film, it would probably be The Room of video games. That's how fair. Bad it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, it's people that are buying this definitely aren't excited to play it. They're no. Like, oh, that's funny.
But like, I checked on eBay, it's like $500 or something like that.
Jeez.
To buy.
Maybe that's why this is happening. Limited Run's like, you know what? We'll let you buy it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like a cult hit because the angry video game nerd.
I'll probably grab a digital copy just because it's funny, but I'm not going to like throw like a big chunk of money Limited Run over a physical copy.
And then Castlevania Rondo of Blood is getting a re-release on the Turbo Duo, which is sick. I think this is awesome that Limited Run Games is bringing back like previously Japanese.
Do you guys
want to
know why that's happening?
US? Why?
I'll tell you why that's happening. Jeremy Parrish, formerly of US Gamer, and he does a lot of like writing for various websites, but he started working at Limited Run Games a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And he does a lot of their Twitch stuff too. But anyway, he's been talking for a while, like, oh, I can't wait to let you guys know what we're working on. Like, he's been pushing for this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because Limited Run used to be kind of like wouldn't it be neat if Boogerman had a release, remember that game? Whereas now it's like, hey, do people actually want a physical copy of this, you know, this old cool game? Like, you know, it's kind of expanding, because it for a long time it was like, this game that just came out, do you want a physical copy? That's neat. Like, but now we're getting like physical copies of games that like haven't had a physical copy in forever. Like, that's pretty exciting.
And Zombies Ate My Neighbors is gonna be one too. So that's really cool. And then briefly, River City Girls 2 and River City Girls 0 are coming. The latter is actually another Japan exclusive game that's gonna release over in North America and the Western territories. So that's awesome.
It looks kind of like a remake, right? Like, it's meant to look like older.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
No, it's an original kind of game. River City Girls 0. Yeah, it was. It was an actual retro game. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's cool.
So let's just move on to the big company that we all care about the most. Nintendo Direct. They had like quite a big showing. So I'm just going to run through this Tech Radar article here by Samuel Talbot and Nick Pino. So the first thing that came up was Kazuya is coming to Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. He's from Tekken. I know, Abram, you haven't ever played a Tekken game from watching your video on this. Like personally for me, it's exciting because it's a character from a franchise I've ever actually played. And the music of Tekken is absolutely awesome. So, like, I'm hoping we'll hear some tracks like Infinite Azure, Moonlight Serenade, that kind of stuff. And his moveset looks sick too. Like, I love this fighting game. Love that Sakurai's bringing to the game. Like, it's no Sora, it's no Rayman, but I'll take it. So, Josh, I know you don't care for Super Smash Bros. Either, but
is this it? Are they doing more?
They're doing one more. One more. People thought it was going to be the 2-pack, but nah. It's okay. Just the one. But I think this deconfirms Lloyd Irving that people were hoping for, like from Tales of Symphonia. And there's one costume from the Wii U that hasn't been added to the Ultimate yet. So
I think the last character is Sakurai. He uploads his soul into the game's servers, and that's how he retires/dies.
Oh my god.
He just goes, I'm going to rest now, and then he just goes into the game.
To the Lloyd point, I would imagine that that costume will probably come back as one of the Mii Fighter costumes that accompanies this character into the game. And I, again, don't know anything about Tekken, don't have much of an opinion, but Bandai Namco is so intrinsically tied to the development of this game and so important to Nintendo right now with new Pokemon Snap. And it's a long-standing relationship they've had dating back to things like Star Fox Assault and the Mario baseball game. So I'm glad they got another rep in Smash, even if it doesn't resonate with me.
Do you think they could end with two Bandai characters?
I think that they...
As a thank you.
They could, which would be cool, but I my supposition is that it's either going to be a Capcom rep or it's going to be someone like a Crash Bandicoot.
I think it has to, like, I know the other season passes and the other games haven't ended spectacularly well with their character choices, but I feel like if this is going to be the last character in Smash, maybe ever, like, because of Sakurai saying, like, he won't be part of it from now on, yeah, I think it has to be huge.
We'll see.
Like a Crash or a Sora or... I know, Master Chief, like, it has to be, like, pretty groundbreaking. So, next thing, Super Monkey Ball Collection is coming to Switch. It's going to be revitalized versions of the classic, the first three classic games. I'm excited to see this.
I've never played those, but I've always wanted to.
Yeah.
I remember seeing it on, like, G4 when I was a kid, and I didn't have a GameCube, so I couldn't play it, but... This is pretty cool. I really want to play these. I'll grab this for sure.
But yeah, I think it's going to come to all platforms. It was leaked on Brazilian classification board. So I think it's not just going to be Switch. It's going to be on like PS5, Xbox, PC, wherever you play games, pretty much.
Yeah, it's coming everywhere for a budget price. I think it's $39.99.
Nice. Yeah.
So I got a press release about this from Sega several days ago back when it was under embargo. So I just started shouting at the other CBR editors about it who just were not appropriately excited for this. I love Monkey Ball. I absolutely adore this franchise. The games eventually walked over to PS2, which is where I played them as a kid and have since gotten the GameCube versions. I think these are such incredibly inventive and polished platformers of the great world. And this is going to be the best way to experience them. It's the modern presentation of something like a Banana Blitz HD, but with actual good games backing it up. And as I wrote about for CBR, this opens up a really awesome opportunity for a Crash Bandicoot-esque resurgence where we go from a collection of the older titles and pivot that, hopefully, sales success into a new fourth game, ignoring all of the mediocrity that happened in the middle, similar to Crash Bandicoot. So we'll see. But I'm really optimistic about this collection.
Yeah, and I think there's popularity among the public consciousness for this series because I think one of the first successful mobile titles on iOS was a Super Monkey Ball game. So I think there's that love there, and I think it's going to do well personally, and I'm excited to play it. Something else I'm excited for is a new Mario Party game coming out this year called Mario Party Superstars. It's going to have a bunch of old mini games in there, and it's going to have several maps from the N64 era with mini games from across the series into a new refined experience. So it's going to be the first Mario Party game that's going to be online from day one, and that's very exciting. And it's going to come out on October 29th.
I'm really excited. Believe it or not, I'm really excited for this new Nintendo game coming out. But
you aren't a Nintendo fan, are you?
Believe it or not, I'm a little bit of a fan.
You're into Halo, right?
Yeah, I'm more of an Xbox guy. But no, I think this game is really important for several reasons. I think from a macro level, ND Cubed has been trying to find its footing with this franchise, and it got closer with Super Mario Party. It was a good foundation, but it was just fairly vapid in terms of content. And clearly this seems like an interstitial title between Super Mario Party 1 and then 2, which I'd assume is going to come next year after, considering how prolific the series is. So as an interstitial title to get a better handle on board design, I think this is really great, because board design has always been lacking with ND Cubed, but having to go back in and fundamentally understand to retool these N64 boards, I think they're going to be able to get the practice they need to implement their own really crazy boards that I know that they can make, but they just need that practice first. But on a subjective level, My girlfriend is studying abroad in Spain next fall. So this is going to be a really fun title for us to play together now that it has online from day one. So for a lot of different reasons, I'm super pumped for this game.
Yeah. Josh, do you have any history with Mario Party? And are you excited for this?
I played the GameCube and Switch ones with my wife, and we I love and hate the Switch one. Like, there's a lot of good things with it, but there's also a lot of, like, Nintendo does that. Like, every, like, third Mario Party game, you're like, there's a bunch of stuff. You're like, why did you do this? Of course, one of the biggest issues with the Switch one was the online, and they fixed that later. But anyway, I'm excited for this. This looks like kind of a fun little greatest hits package, which they did on the 3DS a few years ago, and I was really confused about that because when it came out and everything, like, it came out too late, I think, for the 3DS. So this is... You know, this is super. I'm gonna grab this. This looks really good.
Mm-hmm. So they briefly mentioned Metroid Prime 4. There's not much information to go off there. They just said they're still working on it. But Metroid fans did get a nice little present through Metroid 5, otherwise called Metroid Dread. This, as someone who hasn't played a Metroid game that much before, is very exciting to me. Like I like how it's realized into HD. The melee combat looks slick and smooth. I love the guns that are presented. I like the little puzzles and the mechanics they've added into the game through some sort of gravity, kind of like, I don't know, like Samus can grab onto balls and then stick onto them. Like, there's a lot of cool stuff going on. Abram, how about you?
Well, I put up a reaction to this on the Backlog Banter YouTube channel, which will speak for itself if anyone wants to go watch it. But this game is, like, so perfect for what the Metroid community wants that it almost seems unreal. For people in your audience that might not be familiar, Metroid Dread is a title, a conceit that has been percolating and rumored since 2005 about.
Wow.
Back when a direct sequel to Fusion, the GBA title, made a little bit more sense. It was 19 years hadn't passed yet. So to see not only a new 2D Metroid, but have it be Metroid 5, continuing the story, and have it be Metroid Dread is so incredible. It is such a realization of what fans have wanted for so long. Plus, it's not only drawing from this lineage of ideas from the past, and old narrative concepts and everything, but it's being modernized by Mercury Steam, who made the exemplary Samus Returns and really found a way to make Samus feel fluid in the modern context. Now that the Metroidvania genre is even bigger than it was in 2017, and we see an even more fluid Samus here, the pieces are all lining up for not only a game that is so perfect for fans, but could really put Metroid back on the map in terms of popularity and resonance in a way that the series desperately needs. I think that this could be a more important title than Metroid Prime 4. I think that this is a significant, significant game for Nintendo, and I'm so glad it's 4 months away.
It just excites me because it seems like Nintendo is more interested in reviving its older IPs now that, you know, they've gone through Mario. They're going to have a new Zelda, but like they can't just keep relying on the same three or four franchises. So it's nice to see them just looking into other kind of IP they have and work on it, right? Because this is going to be the first 2D entry in the series in nearly 20 years.
Yeah,
apparently.
Like, the last one came out in the Game Boy Advance. Like, that's...
Oh my god.
That's how long it's been. Like, the last 2D one.
Right, the last new one, yes. Because we did have Samus Returns as like a... so that's going to come out on October 8th, which is much sooner than we thought it would. And then there's going to be two new amiibo, one for Samus and one for the new robot character called Emmy.
That surprised me more than the game reveal itself was like, oh, not only is it coming out, but it's coming out this year. Like, you know, I was expecting it to end with, like, you know, 2022 or no release date at all. You know, but instead it's like it's coming out in 4 months. That's just, I'm so excited.
So I'm just going to zip through these because we're really running on time. WarioWare is going to get his WarioWare is coming back with Get It Together. It's going to have a bunch of mini games again. It seems like that perfect game if you want to get if you want to brighten your day. And Joseph Yaden is very, very happy about this. It's going to come out on September 10th, 2021. And yeah,
day one by.
Yeah. This was a surprise. Advance Wars is getting a reboot. So both 1 and 2 from the GBA era are coming back. It has new visuals. It looks pretty gorgeous with its anime kind of art style. And that's coming to the Nintendo Switch on December 3rd, 2021. Danganronpa, the franchise, is coming to Switch. It's going to be in a 3-game collection called Danganronpa Decadence. That's coming out later this year. And then I like this joke from Tech Radar. This is the only new hardware Nintendo showed off. It's a Game & Watch for The Legend of Zelda. So you'll be able to play the NES game portably. But it's the first game. It's going to be Legend of Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link, and the original Game Boy version of Link's Awakening.
Why didn't they do that for Mario? They just did the first game for Mario. I was really surprised they didn't do a couple of NES Mario games, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of strange, actually, now thinking about it.
But yeah, that makes me want to grab this, because that's 3 good games right there.
Yeah, and we'll have those weird kind of Panasonic games too. Just kidding. But those aren't included. On top of that, there's a 4th Game & Watch game included called Vermin. That's on there that has been remastered for Link as the main character. It's going to come out on November 12th for $49.99. And then the biggie, the big daddy of the direct, Breath of the Wild 2 was shown off again. The sequel is going to take place in like this land in the skies above Hyrule. There's like a bunch of new abilities, like being able to use fire blasts, being able to warp through kind of like walls. It seems really fun. It's gonna have like this big vast open world, you know. It seems like a bit darker than it was before, because Zelda was taken by the darkness, Link's lost his arm, you know. There's all sorts of things going on with this. So and also, like, when he was in the sky, did you realize like his hair was like super rugged and stuff?
He had sex hair. Yeah, Link fucks. Link fucks confirmed.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
What did you think of this? Not the sex hair, the game.
Well, I want to know what he thinks of the sex hair.
Well, I think that's a really key component of Link's character that hasn't been explored before. So
hair?
Yeah, I think that's really bold of Iyanuma to take him in that direction. Yeah. But no, I think the game looks fine. I am skeptical about Breath of the Wild sequel. When the sequel got announced, the narrative was, oh, it's the Majora's Mask sequel to Ocarina of Time, in the sense of we're going to reuse assets, we're going to reuse the world, we're going to flip a sequel quickly. But now we're at the point where it's time for a brand new Zelda game. It'll be at least 5 years between Breath of the Wild and the sequel. And my concern is that so much of the success of Breath of the Wild was the initial experience. It was truly understanding how open that world was, playing with that physics engine, all of these things, right? And I don't think you can put that genie, or let's say the fairy, back in the bottle, make it Zelda themed. But I think it has a lot of interesting ideas, but I don't think that Iyanuma was ready to show that. The lack of a title was strange. Such a wide release window was strange. I think that they probably should have shown a cinematic and talked about the game conceptually, and then showed gameplay when they are ready to prove to people that this is more than just an expanded Breath of the Wild, because it seems like it's going to use basically the same Hyrule map and just add above, which is an interesting way to go. But ultimately, a five-year cycle for a Zelda game connotates more than just an expanded Breath of the Wild to me. So I love Breath of the Wild. I think it's one of the best games this industry has ever produced. But I'm just hesitant that the sequel won't be able to be what the first game was.
Yeah, I have to agree. Like, you always put out your thoughts like in such an eloquent way, so it makes us look like fools.
No way.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to the sequel of Breath of the Wild. The locations like look absolutely stunning. Like when we see that first shot of Link dropping into the map, like it looks amazing, and it kind of goes back to Skyward Sword.
Very clear.
Yeah,
and that to me that's exciting because Skyward Sword I know isn't like everyone's favorite. I mean, if anything, it's probably everyone's least favorite. But the game had good ideas. Like even if you don't like the game, it had good ideas. So seeing some of those ideas kind of, you know, incorporated into Breath of the Wild 2 could be really good. And also I saw, I think it was Gene Park from Washington Post. I think I saw a couple other journalists say this too. There was a lot of speculation among a couple of critics that were, what was it called? Bowser's Fury. A lot of people were saying, I bet Bowser's Fury is testing out features for the new Zelda game. And I could really see that with Ganondorf and the sky. You know, yeah. Like, what if when you're traveling in the sky, he can, like, chase you or something? I don't know, but there's something we don't know yet. You know what I mean? Like, so, I don't think this is going to be a safe sequel. I think they're just not ready to tell us what makes it so different.
I feel like that 5 years of work was placed on the new map, but also, like, adding different locations to Hyrule and maybe just adding, like, temples as well as the shrines. But we still didn't get a lot of information from this trailer. It was just like, okay, yep, it's coming, you know.
I want to ask you guys too. So we've got 2D and 3D Metroid coming, and as we know, Nintendo usually hates Metroid. So if we're getting a 2D and a 3D Metroid, do you think that means that there's a chance for a new original 2D Zelda? Because that's what I kind of want to see, a Link Between Worlds.
I think that's what Brezzo is working on.
Okay. Yeah,
I think that the challenge with this is Grezzo, but the problem is I just did Miitopia, and so that's a big resource drain. Clearly, it didn't take a ton of time to make because I'm assuming that Grezzo did that right on the back of Link's Awakening. So that's probably a fairly quick.
Are you
job,
telling me Miitopia is the reason Link's Awakening's frame rate's bad? Because that's really that's upsetting. That frame rate is, I don't usually care about frame rate that much, but oh my god, the frame rate was so frustrating in that game.
I would love a new 2D Zelda, I think is the bottom line, but it's just, it's a matter of freeing up those resources. I don't know what happened, and I'm sure your audience could educate me on this, what happened to the dedicated 2D Zelda team. I don't know if that's been absorbed into the Breath of the Wild apparatus, considering how big these games are now. But it does seem like Grezzo would be the front runner for a new title, kind of on that Mercury Steam pipeline of let's get a remake and now let's get a new title. Yeah. But it seems like Nintendo's really tapping Grezzo almost as their own blue point of let's isolate these games we want back and we're going to give them to you to accomplish that. But I would love to see them let Grezzo have another chance, like with Ever Oasis, but with the Zelda IP, because they've worked so intimately with the brand, with the 3D titles and Link's Awakening. So just let them do it. Just let them do it. That's the bottom line.
I agree. Is there any takeaways you want to say about E3 before we close the show? Like, I think we're not going to do the what we're playing section because we went so long.
Yeah, longer episode. I was really disappointed that when Waker HD and Twilight Princess HD didn't show up. I definitely think they're going to make those on Switch. And I'm not trying to put down Miitopia. I just can't imagine a world where Nintendo says, yeah, Captain Toad and Miitopia can go to Switch, but Wind Waker and Twilight Princess can't.
Yeah.
You know, so I think they're coming. I just don't know why they didn't announce them. That would have been perfect to be like, oh, in addition to the Game & Watch, we're also doing this.
I think it's because they want to focus the marketing on Skyward Sword HD.
Okay.
I think that's that connection between The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild sequel and Skyward Sword will be evident in some fashion. Yeah. Maybe the two could link together. Like, it'd be so cool if Skyward Sword had like this little level or like a temple or whatever.
We're gonna find out. You need to have two amiibos to like, do it though.
A narrative point, kind of like linking it together, both of the games, but. I know there's no history of that, but it would be super cool.
Hey, they did something like that with, much more primitive, but they did something like that with Metroid Prime, Metroid Fusion. So, you know, don't say never, they might.
But, yeah, like, I think we'll see Twilight Princess and Wind Waker in September or August, something like that, to celebrate the Zelda anniversary in its own kind of direct, like Mario did last year.
Okay. I don't mean to keep, it's probably annoying to keep hearing like me and other people bang that drum, but like those are really good games and they shouldn't be on the Wii U and GameCube only. Nah. You know what I mean? Yeah, like,
I agree.
Those games should be on Switch.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think overall E3 was good. I think especially considering, you know, a lot of this stuff that we're seeing, this was being worked on during the pandemic, you know, and everyday life was harder for me during the pandemic. I know that was the same for not only developers individually, but also the company as a whole.
Do you think that's the reason why we got Advance Wars and WarioWare's? Because like they had like the pandemic was going on and they had to separate on different smaller projects.
I mean,
so
that's an interesting point for sure. I could definitely see it influencing, you know, more creativity and less like expensive stuff.
The way I look at it is not a function of the pandemic, but as a function of the long-term moves Nintendo made years ago that are finally paying dividends. I believe it was around 2015, Nintendo restructured all of their internal teams to unify them, basically ahead of the Switch, knowing we're moving towards a one-platform ecosystem. So let's unify our handheld developers, our home console developers into Nintendo teams. But historically, we saw Nintendo's home console team have a really challenging time transitioning from standard definition development to HD development. That's why the Wii U had so many delays, and I've gone on record talking about this. So I think that a similar thing happened with those handheld teams who had such a culture shock moving from developing for 3DS to developing for Switch, not only moving from handheld to home console, but from handheld to HD, that I'm sure they felt those same growing pains. But now we're finally starting to see games of the scale of a WarioWare, which speak to that handheld lineage and speak to, hopefully, the pipes being a little bit less clogged and these handheld teams finally being able to implement their ideas on Switch. But it's also worth noting that, and specifically in the case of Advanced Wars, the game is being developed by WayForward, which is a really it's a really interesting piece of information that we didn't learn until the Treehouse broadcast, which kind of contextualizes that release independently. And it gives me hope that Nintendo is now again interested in pursuing independent partnerships the way they did with Cadence of Hyrule. So I think there's a lot of pieces moving right now, and they're finally coming to fruition, which is really exciting for me as someone who enjoys the smaller B-tier handheld Nintendo series a lot.
Just as a side note, I think Nintendo buying WayForward would be a very smart move, just because it's a talented team. They seem like Platinum Games, I guess, they seem like stretch thin with like multiple projects, but when they're focused on one or two projects, like the games are spot on.
And they don't have to worry about like, oh, we have to be making the SpongeBob SquarePants
movie. We have to be making the Bakugan game.
Right. They can just make what they want to make, or what Nintendo wants them to make.
Exactly. Yeah. How would you rate this show?
I'd give it an A.
Yeah.
I think it could have been better, but it wasn't bad. I mean, there's always going to be stuff that, oh, they didn't talk about this. And that's not so much because Nintendo is doing a bad job, but because they own so many, you know, beloved IPs. And they've created so many things. Like I'm saying, a Nintendo Direct can't have everything. It just can't.
I also give this show an A because I think it's Nintendo smartly, like Xbox, arriving with a purpose and fulfilling that purpose. They had to announce their slate for the second half of the year, and they did that. And they did that, in my opinion, with IP and franchises of scales and niches that have not been touched on recently. We've got a lot of tentpole Switch games. Even early this year, things like a Monster Hunter Rise or Super Mario 3D World and Bowser's Fury, those speak to the audience in broad strokes, but we saw a lot of Nintendo speaking to its hardcore fan base, which frankly has not gotten a lot on Switch in recent years, in my opinion. So yeah. I think that they were servicing all of their audiences really well today.
I felt very serviced.
Do you have that sexy hair, Josh?
I want to ask you guys a quick question, too, before we wrap up. Get Guardians of the Galaxy, I saw that's coming to the Switch and the cloud.
Yeah, that's weird.
That's the first game, to my knowledge, that's coming to the cloud. Well, no, because we had Hitman. Never mind. Hitman, I was going to say that's one of the first ones that I've seen outside Japan, but there was Hitman, too. But do you think we're going to see more of that? Do you think that's going to be... Do you think the Switch Pro is still happening, or do you think the cloud is going to be where they do that?
I still don't think that Switch Pro is a guarantee. I don't know. It's kind of weird. Like that whole rumor coming about. Like it doesn't make sense because parts are low right now. Why would you launch a console this year when,
and like, then of course it's barely makes switches well themselves, too, so they don't really need to. I also wanted to ask you guys too, especially Abram, because he's got that Nintendo insider knowledge. I think I'm pretty sure. Do you think they're gonna even mess with? Do you think they're more likely to just do Switch 2, or do you think they're more likely to, like, do you think the mid generation thing's still on the table, or do you think they're just kind of looking to the Switch 2 at this point?
So I can only speak from precedent. And when you look at this Nintendo systems that have gotten revisions, they have been quality of life revisions first and foremost. You know, you do have things like a new Nintendo 3DS that did have a little bit of a power increase, but it was nominal, and the exclusives that manifested from it were few and far between. By and large, Nintendo updates hardware for things like a better screen on the GBA SP. They do things like adding cameras and some functionality on a DSi, right? It's never about pushing the bleeding edge of technology, because Nintendo has never been about that. Going back to the way Gunpei Yokoi designed hardware with the Game & Watch, it's just never been Nintendo's design philosophy. So in my opinion, I think that we will get a Switch revision, but I do not think that the Switch revision is the quote-unquote pro, because it's antithetical to what Nintendo does. However, I do think that if this sort of newer leadership at Nintendo decides to go in the direction of a pro, I think that the future in the context of cloud gaming is maybe on-cart releases for the pro and cloud SKUs for people that have a base or a light.
That would make sense.
It'd be a good way to do it.
That would really make sense, because then those who played like the ordinary Nintendo Switch wouldn't feel left out.
Yeah.
Because, you can't play those games.
Yeah. How far do you think we are into the Switch's like life cycle? Like, it's been 5 years. You think we're like halfway through, or do you think we're like more than halfway through?
They said 7 to 10 was their goal, and I think that that's Nintendo, pulling it back to Pirates of the Caribbean from our Sea of Thieves conversation, they're going to Jack Sparrow this to the water. They're going to step off of that sinking ship and onto the dock, because the Switch is just, it's lightning in a bottle for Nintendo right now, and Nintendo operates on boom and bust cycles of great systems, poorly performing systems. We've always seen this. So I think they recognize that they need to hold on to this as long as they can, and then release something that is a substantive upgrade that people are going to want to go for, that's marketed clearly. And I think that that's not a conversation you entertain until you're in a Wii situation where maybe hardware is selling, but software is plateauing, and software is obviously not plateauing right now. And that's where Nintendo makes their money. So I think that we're in this for a good few years still.
I'm still having fun with my Switch. I don't want to get to a point like in the Wii cycle where it was like, oh man, they're still making games for this thing. Let's do a new system. You know, just the Wii was just, it overstayed its welcome by a couple of years. And I don't want the Switch to do that, because I don't want this thing to turn into a thing I don't like playing. I want it to keep being exciting. And I think that if they just refresh it with stronger hardware, but it's the same kind of concept, that would be a good way forward.
Yeah, I think they have to keep this concept from now on, but they probably won't. But anyway, that would be a good way to end things. I would give an A to Nintendo, by the way, just to end it off.
Yeah, it's a good show.
Yeah. So, Abram, where can people find you?
So people can find me primarily over at Backlog Banter, youtube.com/back/lot/banter. We make all kinds of gaming and film content over there. The other place to check me out is over at Twitter. Typing Abram Beener is going to be more efficient, because my handle is Penguins with Capes, but there's not enough space for all those characters. and that's a great hub to find my written work over at Comic Book Resources, as well as a pretty good entry point to all of my video content at BLB. So Twitter is probably the nexus, but I'd push people towards BLB, because CBR, believe it or not, they've got an audience. I want to build that BLB up a little bit.
Josh, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at It's Strict Josh, and then you can find my stuff at RetroWare, Prima Games, and GamePer. I'm working on a couple of pitches for Prima that I think are pretty cool, and I think they'll probably get approved, so I'll be sharing those soon.
Cool. And you can find me at Panwell Writes on Twitter. You can find my written work at GamePer, GameSkinny, RetroWare, all sorts of places. I also just got a job at How To Geek, so I'll be doing a bunch of
content. Oh, right on. Yeah, I love that website. Yeah. I've used them for like over 10 years. They're great.
So look out for that too. Yeah, go listen to Go Beyond the My Hero Academia podcast each and every Wednesday. Vaughn Hyde and I, we go through each and every episode of the show in excruciating detail. We talk about the manga, we talk about the anime. If you're a My Hero Academia nerd, you'll love it. I promise you'll love it. But yeah, that's the show. I do want to say that, you know, uploading on Wednesday isn't going to be the norm. I know we've been doing that over the last few weeks, but it's going to be next Tuesday, next week. So stay tuned for then. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week, hopefully with Joseph. And yeah. Also, thank you so much, Abram, for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. It was really fun. And we all learned that Link Box together. All right, bye, everybody.
Right, bye.
's definitely sexier though.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores led by Walmart and Target are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.